Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason. I'm Jason. And we're back with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. We're your hosts.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jason. And this week is a new week. It's a brand new week in the world. Last Tuesday was Super Tuesday.
It was.
It was super in the fact that I guess Donald Trump won every state except for Vermont.
Uh-huh.
And Nikki Haley decided that she was out, which... Wah, wah. Yep. I knew that was coming, but it's pretty funny. It makes me wonder what you think of Nikki Haley. What are your thoughts on Nikki Haley?
Not positive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't like her?
No.
Yeah. Is it? What about other Republican women? Like, what are your thoughts on Republican women in general?
Garbage.
Garbage. Are they traitors? Is that what it is?
It doesn't make any sense. I'm like, why are you... aligning with the party that has none of your interests at heart.
Yeah.
It's kind of like gay Republicans.
Yeah.
I don't understand that either.
Yeah, it's weird.
That could be a whole episode.
Well, you know, last week we did our Troubled Teen Camps episode, and I said we were going to go back to our Republican shitbags. And the reason that I bring up Nikki Haley is because she was a woman and a Republican and a shitty shitty Republican
shitbag,
as
yes.
a female. Mm-hmm. And last time we did a Republican shitbag, we went over G. Gordon Liddy, who was a man and a Republican shitbag. And I thought, well, to be fair, for equality's sake, we should cover a woman from the past who was a Republican shitbag.
Well, it is March.
Yeah.
Which is Women's History Month.
Yeah, so we're going to kick off this Women's History Month remembering a lady who was a Republican shitbag from the past times all the way up until relatively recently, who you might not know that much about. Her name was Phyllis Schlafly. Do you know who Phyllis Schlafly was?
No clue.
You don't know who she was?
No.
Okay, good. That's good. Just like with G. Gordon Liddy, you're going to learn a whole new world of politics that happened when we were not yet born. And, she might be one of the worst people ever. So we're going to be going over Phyllis Schlafly, and that's what we're going to do for this week's Republican shitbag series. It's going to take a couple of episodes to get through her because she's done a lot of shitty shit. But we'll start here today. So on October 15th, 1924, in St. Louis, Missouri, a girl was born, Phyllis McAlpine Stewart. McAlpine's kind of a cool...
How do you spell like that?
M-C and then capital A-L-P-I-N.
Oh, like
yeah.
Oh, like McAlpine.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
But with no E, so it's McAlpin.
Oh.
Yeah. So her father was John Bruce Stewart, so her dad was named John Stewart, but he went by Bruce. But yeah, her dad's name was John Stewart, and her mother was Odile or Dottie Stewart. So I don't know the name Odile, O-D-I-L-E. You ever seen that name before?
O-D-I-L-E. No, I've seen like Odell.
Yeah. I don't know what the deal with her mom's name is, but everywhere in her biographies and stuff, everybody called her Dottie, D-A-D-I.
Okay.
So we're going to call her Dottie because that's what everybody called her. So St. Louis, this was St. Louis in the 20s. So back then, it used to be a big city with 800,000 people. I didn't realize that St. Louis was actually a major city back in the 1920s, one of our biggest cities in the country. But by the time Phyllis was six, the population had dropped to less than 200,000, and that was because the economy was complete shit because of the Great Depression.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
From 800 to 200?
Yeah. And it was basically this big manufacturing city, and the Depression hit, and it just went to shit, and everyone left. So... that's part of why St. Louis is the way it is, which I find kind of interesting. By 1932, her father, John Bruce Stewart, was in long-term unemployment, which was pretty common at the time because of the Great Depression. Her mother, Dottie, had more education than your average woman at the time. So, women weren't as educated back then, but she had a pretty decent education. She had gone to college, so... she took up a job as a librarian and a teacher, and she would work 7 days a week, and she taught at a Catholic girls' school, And because she taught at that school, it allowed Phyllis to attend that school that she wouldn't have otherwise not been able to afford. So she went to like a pretty rich Catholic girls' school because her mom stepped up and worked 7 days a week while her dad was on, you know, which was, her dad was unemployed at the time. She already has an interesting sort of different situation from the way most people were at the time. Both of her parents were conservative Republicans, but according to Phyllis, they didn't talk about politics much, if at all. Most of her early life seems to have gone pretty well, especially for the time period, considering. And it was all because of her mother working extra hard. In Phyllis's biography, the author makes it seem like her family's insecure financial state didn't affect her at all, which I have a hard time believing. I think that it did, but I think it comes out in ways later of her Republicanness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Her shittiness later in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The issue of her primary, of her mother being the primary breadwinner of the family is something that the biographer also says has no impact on Phyllis whatsoever.
That's not true.
Yeah, I don't believe that either.
No.
You will find that her mom doing that has a lasting impact in her life, and not in a good way. So Phyllis did quite well in school. She worked at school paper. She got good grades, and overall, she achieved on a pretty high level. But her father, he refused to take unemployment. So her dad was like, I'm not going to take unemployment, because he was afraid if he did, his kids would like have to pay it back after he died. And he was opposed to what he called Roosevelt's war on free enterprise and the welfare state he is building.
Wow.
So he was so against Roosevelt that he was like, I'm not going to take unemployment, like, at all. And instead, my wife's going to go work 7 days a week.
I mean, kudos for having principles,
mm-hmm.
And sticking to them. But stupid.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah.
Like, for not using a resource available to you.
Yeah. I think that's going to be impactful for her as well. She's going to have that same type of attitude her entire life. And I think there's this weird father, mother, daughter thing that's going on in this whole thing that we're going to come back to at the end of today's episode and see if you can see some areas where all this information might be pertinent to how she ends up later on. By the time Phyllis graduated from high school, she was valedictorian and she almost had the highest grade point average of the whole school, which was made up of rich kids who got special treatment. So I guess it's not really that impressive, especially considering there were only 10 girls in the class, but she was.
Well, but doesn't valedictorian have the highest grade point average?
Yeah, but she was talking about, so she went to the girls' school.
Yeah.
So she almost had the highest grade point average between the girls and guys.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But she was valedictorian of the girls' class. Everything was separated.
I see.
And there was only 10 girls, though, so she beat nine other girls.
Yeah, she took those other nine. Damn!
To be valedictorian. Because of her success in school, she got a 4-year scholarship to Maryville College. But after going for 1 year, Phyllis found it to be too easy, so she applied and was accepted to Washington University in St. Louis.
Oh.
So Washington University has a St. Louis division, I guess. I didn't know that, but apparently they do. This did mean she would have to work to pay tuition, but it was not that expensive back then. If you lived at home with your parents to pay tuition, it was like $900 a year or whatever. I mean, it was still, you had to pay, but not like it is today.
Yeah.
But she did have to get a job to be able to pay this tuition. And because around this time World War II had started, she easily found a job at the St. Louis Munitions Factory, where she tested machine gun ammo by shooting machine guns all day. And that's what paid her way through college.
What a sweet job.
Yeah. I'm going to work to just shoot machine guns all day.
Be like, yep, this one works.
Yeah.
And you're like, hold on, I'm not sure about this one. Let me try again.
Uh-huh. So she's paying her way through college shooting machine guns all day, which that's
a girl named
sweet.
Phyllis,
mm-hmm.
shooting machine guns for a living.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those jobs, though, where, you know, it's good for her at that time. But I think she even at the time knew, like, well, this only is really a thing because we're at war. Like, this job will go away.
Right. This isn't long term. This isn't a career.
Yeah. No one's going to pay me to shoot machine guns forever. Although, if they did, that would be awesome. She got her bachelor's degree in arts, and then she would then go on to Harvard and got her master's degree.
Wow, okay.
But It actually wasn't Harvard, because at the time, Harvard was segregated between boys and girls, and it was actually a place called Radcliffe College that would eventually be incorporated into Harvard, but technically her master's degree was from Harvard, as you would say now, but at the time, they distinguished between the two. So keep that in mind, too. So around this time, it's 1945 or so, Phyllis wrote some essays that were like very promotional of the idea of a United Nations. This is strange because the idea of a global world order will be something she'll be opposed to relatively quickly, but she's 24, so I guess you can forgive her. After World War II, the national economy began to contract, and Phyllis began to resent the way the government dealt with the problem. She won an essay contest for an essay she wrote about unqualified veterans taking the good jobs. So, like, all the vets came back from war and were taking the good jobs, and she was mad about that. And she wrote an essay about that.
The tigger-ger.
Yeah.
Except it was veterans.
Yeah. It's kind of funny in this case.
Who came back from World War II?
Mm-hmm.
Those were the ones we all celebrated, I thought.
Yeah, well, she didn't. She thought that it was the
government. She was like, they showed up and took her jobs.
The government was interfering too much, and she totally saw that this could be used as something to help, say, black people or women or gay people. And she was like, that's not good. And so she was like, fuck it, I'll attack the World War II veterans.
Wow.
Because she saw where things are going.
Phyllis.
Yeah, so that gives you an idea. Phyllis was pretty fucking right-wing in 1945. Which is why it's so interesting that she would be pro-United Nations.
Yeah, that doesn't align.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. She was pretty mixed up at the time, I think, as far as, like, you can say she had these strong right-wing politics, but also there's some weird waffling that's going on there. And I think that she'll clear that up later. She will, later in her life, become less and less mixed up about it and more straight-line, hard right. But at the beginning, she was kind of feeling her way around, I think. So she decided to get a job working for the American Enterprise Institute, which is a right-wing think tank that still exists today. Hooray!
Wow.
American Enterprise Institute. This think tank was the beginning of what would become an organized, conservative, hard-right move in the United States, in the movement. So they kind of were responsible for trying to generate a conservative grassroots movement in America. And so she worked for them as a 24-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah. They focused on combining different anti-New Deal groups with different anti-war groups. But anti-war seems like it would be lefties. But at the time, anti-war meant pro-Nazi.
Oh,
because the war they're talking about is World War II.
Right.
So the anti-war people.
So if you're against that war, then you must be supporting.
Not everyone who was against the war, but most people who were against us, the United States getting involved in World War II at the time were pro-Nazi. It was code.
Right.
So they were trying to get different anti-New Deal groups.
Anti-New Deal.
Mm-hmm, mixed with the pro-Nazi anti-war right-wing people.
So, and no socialism or...
Yeah, that was the other thing. They also found anti-communist groups. So they were like, if we mix the anti-communist, the anti-New Deal people, and the anti-war pro-Nazi people, then we'll have a base.
What a soup.
Yeah, now that sounds a little bit familiar, Donald Trump. Yes, I think we should mix those people. That'd be great.
There's good people on both
sides. We don't
like
the Green New Deal. We don't like interference in Russia and Ukraine, and we don't like commies. Like, that's just the same. Just replace New Deal with Green New Deal, and it's the same exact thing. So after a year of working for the AEI, Phyllis becomes a full-on right-wing conservative Republican. So after working there for a year, they straighten her out, right? Like I said, she was kind of feeling her way around, but she goes to work at this right-wing think tank, and within a year, she's got it all locked down. So I'm sorry when I said she was 24 earlier, because she was 22. I'm sorry when this happened, so that was my bad. So now that she's 22 years old, she gets a job as a campaign manager for a congressional candidate named Claude Bakewell. For the time, this was very strange because of Phyllis being female. It would have actually been, she was the first female campaign manager of a U.S. House campaign, like, ever, for Republicans. I mean, like, first time ever, which I think is really interesting. So Claude would go on to win his congressional seat and end up in the House. So this propels Phyllis.
Well, yeah, she clearly did well and he won. And I would assume that others would want her assistance.
Yeah, so that's what happened. Now we get to what, in honor of Chris Chan, I will call Phyllis's love quest. That's just how I introduced the part where they meet their partners. So by the age of 24, Phyllis met her future husband, Fred Schlafly. So that's where her name's going to go from Stuart to Schlafly. He was a guy who lived in Illinois and had read, like, he had read a bunch of the American Enterprise Institute's newsletters that were written. Mm-hmm. And she was like, he was like, I got to meet the dude who's been writing all this awesome stuff for the American Enterprise Institute. Like, this stuff is really cool. And so he drives from Illinois to St. Louis to try to meet this guy who's writing this stuff. And it turns out it's a woman.
A girl.
And they fall in love.
Oh, whoops.
Fred was a Catholic and a conservative activist, and he was a lawyer and he was rich. So Phyllis was totally down with getting with him. And he was like, I want to meet this guy who has this awesome politics. And it turned out to be a girl. So he was like, yay. And they end up like on a courtship where they write these weird ass love letters that are mostly like anti-communist left bashing things, but also love letters.
Oh, wow.
That have been released. Yeah. And so they go on this weird courtship. It lasts for a few months, and they end up getting married in 1949. And would stay together for the rest of their lives. So it was love at first sight. Like,
wow.
Fred and Phyllis were just in love. He actually described her as like, he's like, talking to her was like talking to a cigar-chomping right-wing politico and not to a woman. Which I find an interesting thing to say.
And he was like, I fell in love immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird, right?
I mean, there's, I guess it's proof there's someone for everyone out there.
So by now, Phyllis has become very anti-communist, to the point where she believed that President Truman was a communist.
Wow.
Yeah, the Truman who nuked Japan and hated the Soviets, that Truman. That's the one she thought was a commie.
Wow.
Yeah, the one who nuked Japan and hated the Soviets. Very funny. In 1952, Phyllis ran for a congressional seat in Illinois in a heavily Democrat district. She beat the more center-right Republican in the primaries. She managed to beat her. It may have been one of the first times right-wing wacko beats normal conservative elections that we see happening all the time now.
Hmm.
May have been the first time that happened. She did lose to the Democrat in the you know, general election, but she won the nomination. And this was bittersweet because although she lost, she did get invited to speak at the National Republican Convention.
Wow.
And when she did go speak at that National Republican Convention, she got a standing ovation. It was the first and only one that night. And she ended up being invited to every Republican National Convention for the rest of her life.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Impressive, Phyllis.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So starting around the late 50s, early 60s, Phyllis started writing anti-communist literature, such as like pamphlets and eventually books. She was so paranoid about communists that she supported a huge nuclear stockpile to protect the United States from commies. This is a quote from Phyllis. Nuclear weapons were a marvelous gift given to our country by a wise God. God gave us nukes to protect us.
Damn right. So we ought to use them.
That's where she's at. So you may have, we've talked about this before, but the John Birch Society was a humongous, I did an episode called Coke Money about the John Birch Society. They were a just huge anti-communist organization in America.
Well, anti-communism, that sentiment was huge in that time era anyway. Like, that's back when our parents were kids and they were having to practice, you know, nuclear bomb drills and stuff like that. It was a fear that was kind of in America.
And the John Birch Society was like the group that not only were they like anti-communist, but they were using it to cover up like just specifically racist and, you know, I guess eugenicist type beliefs.
It was all, they couched a lot of like stuff
in
the anti-communism rhetoric, and a lot of that happened to be racist and sexist and hateful and bigoted.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yep. So what? How do you think Phyllis would have fit in with them?
She would have fit in perfectly.
Yeah. So she was a secret member of the John Birch Society starting in 1959, according to her own letters released last year. So what's funny is that she will always deny being in the John Birch Society, but in her private letters, she was a member from 1959 onwards and was just a secret member because the John Birch Society was a little bit extreme and she wanted to still run for office and stuff like that.
Oh, so it was too risky to be open about that.
Yeah. So I wrote, she publicly denied this, but she is a liar. So
she is a liar.
So that's how I wrote that sentence. So in 1960, Richard Nixon was trying to get... Yeah, I know.
Nice.
Yeah. In 1960, Richard Nixon was trying to win the presidential nomination, and he wanted to add anti-segregation and anti-discrimination planks as part of the Republican Party. So he's like, even though he's Nixon and he is a racist, I mean, you can listen to him say the N-word a bunch on tape. He knew that which way the tides were turning because it's 1960. Mm-hmm. He sees the way the winds are blowing, and so he wants anti-segregation and anti-discrimination as platforms, as planks of the Republican Party. He wants to, you know, really shore that up. And Phyllis is very bothered by this idea. She does not like it at all. So she leads a group of what she calls moral conservatives to oppose Nixon's stance against segregation and discrimination.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. It worked, and that's part of the reason Nixon lost the election to JFK, was because Phyllis was attacking him from the right, being, I guess, pro-discrimination and pro-segregation, essentially, which is an interesting place. So she's... One podcast I heard talking about this was like, just think about it in the terms of, in this story, Richard Nixon is the good guy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. To give you on a scale of how bad Phyllis is, Richard Nixon is the good guy. So after this, a new figure appears in our story. His name was Senator Barry Goldwater. We're going to go over Barry Goldwater in his own episodes because Barry Goldwater was a fucking insane, racist, crazy weirdo who had one of the most insane lives I've ever heard. So to be short about it, he was bad enough for us to do several episodes on like we are Phyllis.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea of what kind of dude he was. He was a Republican shitbag. Phyllis was a huge stan of old Barry Goldwater and even wrote a book that was called A Choice, Not an Echo, which would go on to sell, in quotes, millions of copies. A significant amount of these copies were bought and given away by preachers and the John Birch Society. So selling millions of copies isn't exactly accurate. We know there's documents and stuff that the John Birch Society brought hundreds of thousands of copies at a time and would just give them out at meetings.
Yeah.
So it was a bestseller. This book basically is a giant conspiracy theory argument saying that there are secret kingmakers in the Republican Party who are nominating all these Eastern elites who are not right-wing enough. And
secret what makers?
Kingmakers.
Oh.
Who were like in charge, and they were only running candidates that were moderate and not what the real party, the real Republicans want. They were nominating rhinos in today's terms.
Oh.
And that was the whole point of the book, that the real Republicans were having their party stolen by Eastern elites who were nominating only rhino candidates.
I see. Centrics.
Centrists,
I mean.
Yeah, so that would put her, in today's terms, on the side of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Donald Trump.
Yeah, she would be a MAGA.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what she was arguing back then, though. You got to remember, this is 1960. Mm-hmm. So she is the reason this stuff exists today. Like, the things that are happening today and the way they're like, there are secret people in the Republican Party that are rhinos and they're taking it from the real down-home Republicans. She created that. That wasn't a thing in America until old fucking Phyllis Schlafly decided to make it for us.
That's pretty impressive because she was a female.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
That much of an influence.
It's interesting. It will become more infuriating as we continue.
Okay.
Long story short on Goldwater, he wins the Republican nomination because of Phyllis's support, but he loses the general election because being a racist, shitty, horrible person. So in 1967, Phyllis ran for president of the National Federation of Republican Women. She ran against a lady named Gladys O'Donnell, who was a moderate, and most of the quotes about her, just that she was just some regular person who was somebody that was not worth commenting on. She was just a normie. Mm-hmm. And Phyllis ran against her, but lost because a bunch of people organized against her because of her crazy far-right conspiracy ways.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I would have assumed that she would win.
You would, except for that tells you kind of a little bit about what's going on at this time period. It's easy to compare it today because of the attitude, but she was inventing this attitude, this MAGA, we're the real grassroots down home Republicans and these elites are stealing our party. That idea was very fringe at that time. I know now it's pretty popular, but that's because of her. She is in the process of making it. Mm. So the reason she loses this National Federation of Women is because she's on a very fringe radical side of things, and she's going to spend the rest of her life changing that and making that not the radical side and making that the normal side.
I see.
That's going to be her mission, and it partially comes from this losing this National Federation of Republican Women thing, which is a weird name, but Federation, it makes it sound like they're like in Starfleet or something.
I was going to say, like Star Trek?
Yeah, it's a weird name for a group.
Spurs.
So in 1970, Phyllis ran for Congress for the House in Illinois. And again, she lost because it was a heavily Democrat district. And she will never again seek office. But she didn't know that. But that broke her. She had lost quite a few things by this point. Now we're getting into 1970. And around this time period, a thing called the Equal Rights Amendment was gaining support in America. This was a proposed amendment to the Constitution that would give protection of equal rights to government employees. So that was all it was. It was to give equal rights, depending on gender or race, to anyone who was a government employee. The amendment had been proposed in 1923. So by now, it's already been 50 years.
50 years.
Yeah. And it had been brought up every year and voted on and never managed to pass. But it was gaining more and more steam. And by 1970, it was starting to look like it might actually fucking pass. Yeah. And Phyllis was horrified that the Equal Rights Amendment might pass. And so she began to work to stop it.
Why would she be horrified, though? I mean, it's government employees. If any employer in the country should be held to equal standards, mm-hmm. it should be the government.
Right. Well, Phyllis is going to disagree with that wholeheartedly. And you'll see as we continue, her reasons for it are batshit crazy.
So she thinks the government should not be held to standards that say they have to treat employees equally, that they can openly discriminate or abuse people that they don't like. Yet she also says that she doesn't like communism.
Right.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, the hypocrisy is going to be very strong, and you're going to get very mad at Phyllis starting right about now. So,
great.
Her first move was to organize the Stop ERA campaign. The word STOP was an acronym for Stop Taking Our Privileges.
Stop Taking Our Privileges? I don't understand what she's saying.
Okay, well, first of all, you can't have an acronym where the first word is the acronym. Like, that's crazy. You can't say the acronym is STOP, and then what's the first word of the acronym? STOP. That's fucked up. You don't do that in acronyms, first of all. So she needs an acronym lesson. Second of all, she made many insane arguments against the ERA, saying that it will destroy the family, that women will be able to be drafted, that women will have to share bathrooms with men, and what's going to happen with gay people? They'll probably be allowed to get married. This was her argument against the ERA.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see. I couldn't quite understand her approach, but she's saying that treating minorities or women equally will destroy the family
mm-hmm.
because it will allow women to have success
Yes.
In careers and yes. that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I forgot to bring this up, but it's a good time to bring it up now. When she was working shooting the machine guns, mm-hmm. there's a quote from her that says, she's like, I get paid less than the men at my job to do the same job, but they have to lift heavy things, so it balances out.
She's like, but it's fair.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's that same sort of argument. She believes that women get a privilege from not being equal, and that anything that's trying to give women equality is taking away their privileges. And so she organizes, stop taking our privileges to oppose the ERA.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So here I have some quotes from her around this time, and these are all things that she said during her campaign against the Equal Rights Amendment and this organization that she started. What I am defending is the real rights of women. A woman should have the right to be in the home as a wife and mother. I don't know what about getting equal treatment for government jobs wouldn't let you do that, but that is what she says. She says, my husband lets me do what I want. I have canceled speeches whenever my husband thought that I would be away from home too much. So she's portraying herself as like, I'm like a...
I'm a homemaker.
Mm-hmm. I'm not even really a politician.
I just ran a few times for office.
Here's another one. I simply didn't believe we needed a constitutional amendment to protect women's rights.
What? Because women have their rights, and their mm-hmm. rights are at home where they belong.
Oh, it gets better. Quote, women find their greatest fulfillment at home with their family. Didn't you know that that's where women find their greatest fulfillment, Amanda?
Oh, Phyllis.
Mm-hmm. A man wants the security of knowing he doesn't have to compete against his wife.
It's just so weird.
I love that one.
It's just so weird.
Yeah?
Because she, for the time, is an arguably very successful, mm-hmm. independent thinking woman.
And wasn't her mother, too.
Well, her mother was the one breadwinning and mm-hmm. taking care of the family because dad mm-hmm. was too proud to
right.
get benefits.
Yeah, but the lesson she got from that was that women shouldn't be doing those things and should be at home raising the kids. And that
so
what
she
her mom,
like felt bad because her mom had to go out of the house every yeah. day and support the family.
And then she was going out of the house every day and supporting the family and working and being a politician, while Fred, he was like an engineer and he did work for Westinghouse, but I think she made more money than him and she was definitely more famous than he was leading all these campaigns. Mm. And she would forever, they have, I'll spoiler for ahead a little bit, they end up having like 6 kids. And she spends almost no time with the kids. And she talks about like how, oh, well, when I'm giving a speech, I can always find a woman to watch my babies for a little while I give a speech. So she wants to portray herself as I'm a regular mom, a housewife, and that's what's good. But she doesn't follow that. She goes out and achieves at a high level. And because of that, she thinks that she can make the argument that if you're not achieving in this current environment at a high level, it's your fault and not that we need an equal rights amendment.
Interesting.
If that makes sense, if you see what I meant by that.
So I'm just taking it as there's a lot of self-hate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and she...
And resentment.
Yeah, and she's using the illusion that she is one of these people who's just a normal housewife and she's able to achieve. She created that illusion and then uses that against people to say, if you can't achieve, it's not because men are keeping you down. It's because you're not as good of a woman as I am.
You're not as womanly a woman.
Yeah. You suck at it.
Right.
Yeah. She's weaponizing it. You see what I'm saying? And it's all an illusion. And that's what makes it so fucking infuriating.
She's obviously not able to do all of those things.
No.
Without assistance.
She's super rich.
Yeah.
Like, super fucking rich. And she married a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So, like, the irony of the whole thing is that, like, she will always be doing that. She will always be weaponizing this illusion that's not true about her life. And I think that's something that a lot of them do. I don't think that's unique to her, but I do think that it's something she's a very stark example of.
Well, now, was her husband an attorney or an engineer?
He was a lawyer, but he also ended up working like as an engineer, or he built like an engine or something for Westinghouse. He was loaded. He was doing lots of things. What I'm saying, he was a rich dude.
Right.
Yeah. He just wasn't as I guess he was probably making more money than her, but I don't think he was as famous as her is kind of what I meant. Yeah. So another quote from her during this time was, sex education classes are like in-home sales parties for abortions.
What?
Which is like, Jesus, lady.
It's like Tupperware.
Yeah.
Mary Kay.
Yeah. So there's the Catholic shit coming out. She's very, you know, they're Catholics, which...
You know those Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Sexual harassment on the job is not a problem for virtuous women.
Oh.
So if you get sexual harassed, it is your fault.
You were not being virtuous.
Mm-hmm. Because she goes, another thing she said about it was that she said, if a man won't pinch or touch a woman... or solicit them for sex if the answer is most certainly no. So if you're being virtuous enough and they know that the answer would be certainly no, they won't harass you.
I find that very interesting because you can't tell me that she hadn't been sexually harassed.
Oh, of course.
I mean, working in a place shooting machine guns and then being in these organizations and these places that had predominantly been men running things and still were, you can't tell me that she didn't experience sexual harassment just because she's a woman. Like, I don't even know what she looks like, and that really has nothing to do with it. Any woman can be sexually harassed. You can't tell me that she wasn't.
Yeah. Well, apparently she wasn't being virtuous enough, I guess.
Did she just take it and be like, oh, I was sending signals. It was my fault.
I can't defend her position on that one. I don't know. I don't know where that's coming from, but that is something that she said. This next one's even better. By getting married, the women had consented to sex, and I don't think you can call that rape. So...
she said married women can't be raped?
Yep. Because you consented by getting married.
Wow.
So...
Phyllis.
Yeah, that's some quotes from Phyllis around that time period. And so... it gives you an idea, a little bit of an idea of who she is. She's working on this campaign to stop the ERA. That's her big thing. She's reforming the Republican Party and making it conservative. And a lot of people and things that I read about Phyllis is that, like, you can very easily draw a straight line from her to Jerry Falwell and the moral majority, Reagan, onwards. So she created what we're living in now. It's like almost single-handedly. It was... Phyllis Schlafly doing this. It's fucked up, and she's horrible. She's so bad. Those quotes that I read, we're gonna get to hear her talk and say some things later that are gonna infuriate you even more than those.
Great.
Those were just some things that I found from the time period, because this is, like I said, the early 1970s. So she's just now getting started. We just now start getting that I can find footage of her available for me to cut clips and give you some clips. But that's where we're going to go next week. Next week, we're going to be diving into from the 70s and the Equal Rights Amendment onwards with Phyllis to see what else she will manage to do. And we'll have some audio clips so we can hear in her own words. Maybe you'll be able to understand. I'll show you some pictures. You'll be able to see what she looks like, and we'll be able to move on from there. But we had to go over this early life stuff because I think it's going to be informative, because if you didn't know all that stuff, it would just be some crazy lady that I'm playing clips of. And this way, I think you'll have an understanding of, like, who this person is that's doing this shit. Because I'm trying to build up to an argument that she is the reason we have Donald Trump. And I know that sounds crazy for now, but I believe that to be the case. And I'm going to be laying it out in the next couple episodes. So that does it for our first episode on Phyllis Schlafly. How you feeling? What you think of, what do you have to say about Phyllis so far?
I want to hear more, but I want to hear it from her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we're, that
I want her to explain herself.
Yeah, because
if I could, I would meet Phyllis in a room and I would say, Phyllis,
What the fuck?
Explain yourself, because maybe I'm misunderstanding.
What do you? Maybe I could help. I mean, like, what do you?
No, I want to hear her. Okay. No, I want to hear her words.
Okay.
I want to hear her say it.
Okay.
Because I don't understand her logic.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we can fill you in on that. So that leaves everybody on a cliffhanger. Like, you better be excited for next week, because Amanda's gonna have some things to say.
Anybody else as pissed as I am?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I knew this was going to happen. I knew you were going to hate this lady. I was like, Amanda's not going to like
this
lady. You're
like, all right, Women's History Month, let's piss off Amanda.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, but I mean, this is who she was. She was a Republican shitbag, and I couldn't do the whole Republican shitbag series and only do women. I mean,
there's definitely some women in there.
Mm-hmm. So, and I thought also to honor Nikki Haley, we might
honor Nikki Haley, who was, by the way, she was the first female to win a GOP primary.
Wow. Well, yeah. Good for her. You're on the wrong side, but at least you won. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be on the wrong side, at least win, I guess is the, that's what I got for you. So, next week we're going to be going over that, and we will see everybody then. I appreciate everybody listening. Last week's episode was great. This week's episode was great. I love everybody. If you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like to say, you can hit us up at our email, carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com. Stay tuned next week for more Phyllis Shitbag Schlafly.
Bye.